Hello, and welcome to the February edition of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. My name's Rob Davidson, content analyst in Awin's global strategy team, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Edwards, who is Awin's global strategy director and also my manager. How am I doing, Kev?
Brilliant, Rob.
Thank you. We're without our third amigo today. Craig Foster is busying himself with data / BI projects currently out at the company HQ in Berlin. So it's just the two of us today. However, on today's episode, we do have two guests joining us a little later. First up, I'll be chatting with Ricky Jones from the affiliate business Serato, who specialize in providing referral marketing and social sharing technology to brands. I'll be asking him more about what that means and how it works shortly. And then after that, Kev, you'll be catching up with our product marketing manager, Ed Chapu, once again, his third appearance on the podcast, to hear more about a couple of new Awin tech releases that are particularly interesting.
Yep, so we'll be talking to Ed about primarily about Bounceless and where we are. We covered it off in November's podcast, but our new tracking solution, Bounceless Tracking, kind of a bit of an update and some of the findings that we've got off the back of launching that, and also briefly be talking about a new release that we've got coming up that's quite interesting, I think, from a publisher perspective.
Yeah, before those discussions, though, I think it's worth us referencing our little trip out to Las Vegas, out to Sin City, where we attended and both spoke actually at the annual affiliate industry conference out there, Affiliate Summit West. What did you make of the event and trip, Kev? Any personal highlights?
Well, other than the kind of just being bamboozled by the general Vegas experience.
Well, you've been a few times before, haven't you?
Yeah.
This was my first trip, so I was even more bamboozled than you, I think.
I think that, I mean, obviously within that environment, it's pretty overwhelming anyway, but the thing that always, I think, stands out for me about US events is how on it everybody is in terms of wanting to sort of network and make connections. I think that we kind of have a slightly more lackadaisical approach in the UK and potentially in other markets where they're smaller, where it's just easier for people to get together more frequently. Mm. And in the US, physically, that's not always possible.
The scale of the geography is so huge, isn't it?
Which means that when they do meet up, they're serious about doing business. And that really comes across. It kind of can be pretty exhausting.
Yeah. We're not used to being serious about business, though. I mean, my personal insider tip for anybody going to Las Vegas in the future is when you check in, go up to the hotel desk and ask them, slip them a $10 or $20 bill note and ask them for a Vegas sandwich. It's not as sordid as it sounds, because they will, apparently you looked this up actually, and you found out that around 3/4 of the hotels on the strip will recognize that as being a way of getting you kind of upgrade to your hotel room, which is what I subsequently got. Your view, I think, was over the car park and mine was over the Bellagio. So it was quite an improvement, definitely worth the $10 bill. We were, of course, out there to speak at the event as well. Before we get into talking about my particular session, can you tell listeners a bit about your own talk at the end of day two?
Yeah, sure. So it was about this theme that we've kind of evolved over, I suppose, the last 6 months or so, which is about how affiliates are sort of a perfect conduit of customer loyalty for brands who are struggling with that whole concept of brand loyalty in a kind of a digital age where consumers are increasingly promiscuous and brands are really struggling to engage consumers and retain customers. And we sort of have paralleled that with this idea that actually, if you look at which companies are really, really good at doing that, it's typically consumer-facing companies who are offering a value add or a very distinct service that has a very distinct consumer benefit. And a lot of those are affiliates. So we sort of iterate that narrative through kind of a series of case studies. And I just think it's a really, I think it really resonates, hopefully it really resonates with people, because it's a very clear idea that actually affiliates offer this sort of really powerful way of connecting with customers. Mm. I don't think the presentation was filmed, but if you do want to see kind of a slightly longer version, which I know you've presented, Rob, it's available on our website via a webinar that we recorded. So you can kind of see the fuller version there.
Mm. From my perspective, it was actually our very first opportunity to talk about and share insights from the brand new Awin report for 2020. So this year's edition was a special commemorative one. This is the fourth edition, actually, of the Aaron Report that we've now launched. And this one was intended to really celebrate the 20th anniversary of the company, because both Affiliate Window and Zanox, the kind of founding partners of Awin as it exists now, were launched originally in the year 2000. Not to mention, actually, by coincidence, that the US network ShareASale that we acquired in 2016 also was founded in that same year. And so this year's publication was a chance to look back at the company's history, the evolution of the industry over that time, and really an opportunity to celebrate those changes and those milestones that we've reached. Now, I mean, I've been with the company since 2013, I think it's seven-year anniversary this year, and witnessed a lot of changes in that time alone. The partnership with Commission Factory that's extended our reach out into APAC, the AffiliNet acquisition, which really consolidated our reach across mainland Europe, and then also kind of passing over 1,000 employees worldwide a couple of years ago, which, you know, all these milestones have occurred just in that short period of time. And I mean, for you, Kev, you've been with the company a lot longer than me. I imagine that's even more so the case for you.
Yeah, so I started back in 2006, so this year will be my 14th anniversary. And when I started, there were 35 of us down in a kind of small, cramped, weird little office down in Greenwich in southeast London. So obviously it's changed massively since then, but I think that a lot of the change that we've seen has kind of been incremental change. So it hasn't felt like hugely disruptive over that time, you know, acquiring companies and growing incrementally and bringing on really good people from those companies who we've been able to retain. So I think that that kind of level of consistency has sort of run through the company over that time, and so it's, you know, it still feels like a familiar place to me after all of this time.
Well, you can download a digital interactive version of the report right now from the Awin website, and we'll also shortly have print versions available across all of our markets around the world in the next few weeks. So do look out for those at upcoming conferences and events where Awin will be present. So I'm now joined on the podcast by Ricky Jones, Chief Commercial Officer at the affiliate business Serato. Hi, Ricky. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks, Rob.
I wanted to start off just by having you tell us a bit about your own personal background. And so I wanted to start by asking what your own experience in the affiliate industry is and how it was that you came to be where you are right now.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I've been around in the industry for about 18 years now. So, you know, it's pretty much since the beginning of time. my first job in affiliates was CJ. So I was employee number 4 in the UK at CJ.
Oh, wow.
So, and been predominantly affiliate network side. So I worked at AffiliNet, Trade Doubler, as well as Commission Junction. Also worked agency side for a bit as well. So I was head of affiliates and lead generation at Omnicom as well. I've been at Serato now for about 18 months or so. So Peter Rowe, who's the CEO of the business, I worked with him at AffiliNet, and we were part of the team that launched AffiliNet into the UK market back in 2005. He became a good friend of mine after that. And when he went to Serato, I had a conversation with him probably about a couple of years now, about the opportunity, and it sounded like a great business and a great role. So I took the plunge and I went to join him.
Right.
So that's where I am now.
Yeah. And I mean, how did Serato itself get started as a business? What was the kind of the real push-off point from which that business started, and what was it trying to resolve as far as kind of commercial dilemmas were concerned for advertisers?
Yeah, sure. So, before we launched the business, we saw that, you know, the ever-increasing role that social plays when it comes to, you know, informing customers' decisions when they're buying products, and also driving specific sales. You know, some of the stats that we see that we've seen in when we've been looking at the market have just sort of pointed to that as well. You know, there were 45 million active social media users in the UK in 2018. UK adults are 4 times more likely to purchase when recommended by a friend. You know, over 80% of UK consumers trust a recommendation from someone they know. 55% of customers online make a purchase after social media discovery. And also sort of overarching that, you know, the there's a Nielsen report called Trust in Advertising. I think they release that report quite regularly. You know, they saw that referrals from friends is actually the most trusted form of marketing. So, you know, all of this was good for, you know, good for referral marketing generally, but for us as a business, we saw that, you know, we when we launched the business, we looked at, you know, we were working towards three main objectives when it comes to launching the business. The first one is that we wanted to enable clients to increase and drive their organic social reach across all social media platforms. The second one was increasing the reach, the repeat purchases and reward customers for brand loyalty. And all the third one was to generate new customers by utilizing clients' existing customers. So three sort of specific areas that we wanted to look at. Obviously, increasing social reach is, you know, social media advertising is quite prominent and dominant now. But using a tool like Sorreto enables clients to, you know, to increase their social reach, but also for free. Because we work on a CPA, there's no, you know, you don't pay per click or per posting. You're getting all of that reach for effectively for free. And also increasing repeat purchases. So, you know, it's not only about generating new customers, but it's encouraging those existing customers to continue purchasing again. You know, what we've seen is that it's a really good tool for generating new customers, but also for existing customers, it is, you know, the competition is really competitive in most sectors, you know, particularly in something like fashion retail. So encouraging customers to be able to, you know, customers to be able to repeat purchase is something that is, you know, is really important.
It's a bit of a holy grail, I think, for a lot of retailers online. And we've spoken about this before in previous content that we've produced and presentations that we've given. And there's a real value that affiliate partners like yourself can kind of bring to brands in helping to ensure that the customers that they maybe historically and previously have assumed are their customer and will kind of, you know, out of loyalty, just continue to buy from them. Well, that's been radically transformed by the internet and the options that it gives every single individual user. And so you kind of almost need these new technologies and new tactics in a manner that allow brands to try to recapture that loyalty and try to re-engage those customers who might have shopped from them once, but that's by no means a kind of you know, complete conviction that they're going to return and to kind of continue to spend their money with you.
I think you know, that's a really important point, and that's why really which is sort of driven the success of Sorreto and, and how we work with clients now. It's trying to ensure that they understand that, you know, we are very good at generating new customers, but also your existing customers, just because you have them signed up to your database or they've bought from you once, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to shop again. I've lost count of the amount of newsletters I'm signed up to. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm always going to buy from them.
I've pretty much abandoned my Hotmail account now because it's just full of like
newsletters. Just full up with stuff.
So for the audience's kind of understanding, how does Sorreto actually work in practice? I wonder if you could give us maybe a couple of examples of work that you've done with clients that really illustrate the value there.
So so we're, as you said, we're a referral marketing technology. And the typical way it would work is that a customer would come onto a client's website and go through the normal process of buying something. Once they've done that and they check out, they land on the confirmation page. On that confirmation page, our technology, after a few seconds, will display an overlay. We call it a light box, but it's effectively an overlay that says something like, you know, do you want 10% off your next order? Share this 10% with your friends and family. And there's different ways in which they can share that, either via social media or WhatsApp. And we track all of that activity. That's effectively what we do. It's purely based on a CPA, as I mentioned, so there's no setup fees or integration fees or anything like that. You know, you only pay for the customers that we generate for you. A good example of a client that we've run this for, so we've got over 80 clients that we currently look after. The business has been live for about 18 months now, although the product itself was in development for a couple of years before we actually launched. And one of those clients that we work with is Miss Selfridge, part of the Arcadia Group. Yep. It's an A-Wing client as well. So we have an overlay. So if you go through the process of buying something on Miss Selfridge, when you check out and you land on the confirmation page, you'll see an overlay, which would say, I think the reward that we've got there at the moment is 10% for the person that shares it, and also 10% for their friend. Now, we've been running that for a few months now. The performance of it is good. The share rate that we saw across that activity was was around 4%, and the conversion rate that we saw was around 7%.
Right.
Now, against our network average of around, our network average share rate is about 7%, average conversion rate is about 10%. So that's a little bit below what we would expect it to see. But what that does is, you know, it's a pretty standard offer. That we're able to refine now. So we've had a couple of strategy meetings with the guys over at Arcadia about, you know, looking at optimizing that activity. And we're looking at sort of split testing different offers to see what works best, because the technology allows you to do that.
Yeah.
As well as increasing the exposure that you can get from the scheme, because obviously at the moment what we see is that because all of the traffic is post-purchase, there's going to be a lot of customers that are on the Miss Selfridge database that have not purchased for a while, so might not be aware that they've got a scheme. So, you know, sending a solus email to those customers promoting the scheme, plus having a separate page on their website promoting it, is something that we're going to be implementing very shortly. But also, the fact that we are integrated into the Awin master tag meant that, any client that we work with on Awin, we don't need any additional integration at all on the client side. So that's always, you know, a good thing. It's one less barrier for us to get over. But also for Miss Selfridge in particular, so from sign off to actually launching the campaign was about 5 working days.
Okay, so it's nothing really.
No.
It's very quick and nimble.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was, so that's been a real success story for us.
Yeah, yeah. I wondered actually, so this whole notion of the word of mouth quality and that aspect of your technology solution in terms of referral marketing, what it is about that makes it such a powerful marketing tool.
Yeah.
Because it's something that obviously the popular adoption of social media and social platforms by, you know, the largest, you know, proportion of the populations now around the world have kind of given you a new source of connectivity with your peers. And that's a really valuable thing, like you referenced in the Nielsen research a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
What is it, do you think, that's so powerful about that?
Yeah, well, I think that there are, you know, the stats that I mentioned before sort of point to the fact that this is a sector that is, really important. But there are a lot of clients out there, you know, in our experience, there are a lot of clients out there that don't currently do it for whatever reason that might be. Or they'll do a version of it that might not be, you know, doing everything that it should be. I think specifically it's, you know, what we've seen is that people are keen to share those messages with their friends. So if they are suitably encouraged to share with their friends, then they will do, you know. And if they've just bought something from you and you show them a message at that point on the confirmation page, that is an ideal time to
kind of capitalize on it.
Exactly, yeah, because they're an advocate of your brand. They've just bought something from you, so showing them a message that is going to encourage them to share with their friends, you know, is good for them, because they feel like that they are valuable to you as a business, but also for their friends, because, you know, they're able to generate new customers off the back of that referral. And I think that, you know, marketing generally has been, particularly, you know, above the line advertising has been, you know, it's been a little bit tricky in terms of its perception, which means that consumers nowadays are a lot more savvy when it comes to, you know, the media that they consume and how they engage with brands. And I think that, you know, what you will see is that if a brand puts a post on their own Facebook page, the engagement, well, depending on the brand, obviously, but the engagement level will be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's no real substitute, if I'm putting something on my Facebook page and my friends see it, you know, they're much more likely to trust that, and, you know, because that we asked like-minded people, so they would see that as a, you know, a something that they want to, you know, engage with.
Yeah, I think there's something like, to speak to your point there in terms of the sophistication of today's consumer and in being able to gauge what is advertising. And obviously, you know, this notion that I think there was some research that came out like last year that suggested that advertisers now are considered, in terms of public sentiment, almost as low as kind of politicians or something like that. And there's this real kind of negative connotation that's coming from messaging, maybe direct from brands in a way.
Yeah.
And that by contrast, this whole notion of friends and family are the most valuable means of understanding what is, you know, a good product out there, or what is a good thing that they could buy out there.
Yeah.
And that's where the real kind of value in terms of recommendations comes from. Yeah, so it's a really interesting area, I think. I wondered specifically, in terms, you said the business has obviously been going for about 18 months now. From the affiliate perspective, what role has the industry played in helping to grow the business? Is has it been quite a kind of primary thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, yes, it has. I mean, it's fundamental to what we do, and it's a real sort of strong USP. So when we launched the business, so you know, myself and Peter, we have got a lot of experience in affiliate marketing. So we know the space, we know the key players, we know how it operates. But also when we were doing the research for the before we launched Soretto, we saw that the competitors, the very few competitors that there were globally in the market, none of them actually worked with affiliate networks. So for us, it's been a really strong part of our, you know, our solution, that the fact we work with affiliate networks and our competitors don't. The obvious one is the fact that it is performance based. So we only work on a CPA, and our competitors don't. They charge setup fees and monthly minimums and increase CPAs and things like that. But also from a client's point of view, it's all of the administrative tasks that need to be done when looking after your referral activity can be done through your affiliate network platform. So, you know, the reporting and payments and invoicing, deduplication, you know, that's a key point, obviously, because we are, you know, we follow the rules that are set within a client's affiliate program. So all of the deduplication is done at source through the affiliate network, whereas you know, our competitors will, on a monthly basis, send a client a manual file that they say, these are ours, and then the client will need to manually go through and check whether they are actually theirs or not.
So,
you know, also on a general point, it is, it makes it easier for us, the fact that we can speak to a fewer companies and affiliate networks or agencies or technology partners. About hundreds of clients, you know, the fact that we can come to Awin and speak to, you know, a few number of people about multiple clients, it just makes it easier from a scaling perspective. I mean, you know, I'm glad that we did it, and also there've been a, you know, there are now a lot of, you know, a lot of new entrants into the market, and a lot of those have been sort of tech affiliate partners, which was also part of the reason why we launched the product. But, but it gives us faith that, you know, we are going down the right path. So it's been really good for us.
Yeah. Well, for you, obviously, you've witnessed obviously a lot of changes over the course of 18 years working in and around the industry.
Yeah.
I wonder what your current views on the state of the industry and where it is right now, and where you think maybe improvements might need to be prioritized for the wider industry right now, where that kind of what your opinions on that might be.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, no, there's been a lot of change since I've started in the industry. I think generally speaking, you know, that we've got a little bit of a habit of playing down what we do in the industry, sort of giving ourselves a rap on the knuckles for things that you know, we don't necessarily need to. I think the industry generally is in a pretty good position. I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, there are lots of decent, strong new entrants coming into the market on a regular basis. You know, the spend continues to grow in the industry. So I don't, you know, from a commercial point of view, that the industry is in a decent position. I think that, you know, that sometimes get a little bit frustrated with the constant rebranding of the industry, you know, whether it's sort of affiliate marketing or partner marketing or, you know, performance marketing. It's the same thing. It's affiliate-based, CPA-based advertising is effectively what it is, and it has been for many years. And I think what you'll find is that the drivers of that rebrand of the industry will have their own you know, their own agendas when they're trying to do that, obviously from different businesses that try and redefine what affiliate marketing is. You know, they'll have their own reasons for doing that. So, you know, it is affiliate marketing for me. You know, we get bogged down a little bit in trying to come up with new and fancy names, because I think the perception is that affiliate doesn't get time at board level when it comes to, you know, the decision making. In my experience, it does. And also, you know, people at board level are going to be looking at the, you know, the numbers and how it you know, how it impacts on their bottom line. And if affiliate marketing or whatever you want to call it is doing that, then they'll continue to invest in it.
So it kind of looks after itself at that point, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a misnomer, the naming conventions, I think. Also as well, I think that, you know, the commission levels for that some clients implement for either specific products or new customers when it comes to offering, you know, very low or zero commissions on on existing customers. You know, the focus should be on new customers. I think that, you know, that is been a source of frustration for us, certainly. You know, the fact that we were talking about it earlier, the fact that clients think that because their customers are signed up to their newsletter or have generated a sale, that customer is automatically going to come back and purchase is, you know, is a little bit misguided. I think that if you're, you know, if you're going to offer a commission on new customers, then certainly sort of put it on a, existing customers, put it at a lower level if that's something that you want to do. But you know, you need to motivate affiliates to be able to encourage those repeat purchases. You know, exactly. It's not, and depending on the sector, obviously many sectors are very competitive, and doesn't necessarily mean that customer's just going to continue to shop with you just because they have done previously. So, but if you're setting a decent commission rate for generating those repeat customers, then, you know, affiliates will be motivated to try and, you know, bring that customer back to you rather than sending that customer elsewhere. We know the shopping habits of people typically tend to be to search out for, you know, discounts or cash back, or I know my own, you know, my own buying behavior follows that sort of pattern. So, you know, and I think for us as a business, because we are relatively new, we've had to, you know, agree to commission rates that are, you know, not conducive to a, you know, a profitable business. Because we work purely on a CPA, if we don't drive sales for clients, then we're not going to make any money.
It's a shared objective in that sense.
Exactly. So we need to be rewarded for that. And you know, I've covered before about the you know, the benefits of using something like Sereto when it comes to, you know, existing and new customers. So we can really help with that.
Yeah. So what does the future hold in store for Serrato as a business? What plans and developments do you have in store for the next few months or years?
Yeah, so short term, we're actually moving office. So we're in a short term office at the moment, but we're moving into a new place in Soho Square, mm-hmm. which would be good. We've just taken on a couple of additional staff this quarter, which it is why there's a requirement for a new office. So that's good, and we're looking at recruiting over the coming months as well. We want to continue growing in the UK, so adding to the 80 plus clients that we've already got. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're looking at international expansion. So, right. One of the people we've taken on is an international partnerships manager who will be driving that, which is good because there's no real barriers in terms of the territories that we can launch in. And the product development. It is, we've got a list as long as your arm in terms of how we're going to develop that. It's a pretty strong product now, mm-hmm. and it's sort of, we continue to tweak it on an ongoing basis. But that will continue. So, adding new features and different sort of solutions for our clients is something that is really important to us, but to ensure that we can continue to differentiate from our competitors. So watch this space for that.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for popping in to tell us more about the business, and we wish you all the best for the future.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Rob.
Cheers, Rick.
So I'm here with our resident global product marketing manager, Ed Chaput. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you? Making your third appearance on the podcast.
Really excited. it's a big day, third appearance. So
I think with Craig choosing to kind of be a fairly fair weather contributor, I think that you're probably poised to overtake him for guest appearances.
I'm looking forward to that. That's been a lifelong goal of mine, I think, to slowly undermine Craig Foster.
Well, I mean, that's the primary point of this podcast. Okay, so before we get on to the specifics of what we wanted to talk to you today, which was kind of an update on your last appearance on the podcast, which I think was back in November, where you talked about some of the new product releases and in particular bouncers tracking, which we're going to be talking about today. I'm just interested in a bit of sort of context as to where we are, because there have been a few changes within some of the browsers recently. I'm just interested in hearing your views on where we are generally with tracking. So we kind of seem to have entered this sort of unofficial war of the browsers, where they're kind of all falling over themselves to shout the loudest about their privacy credentials. Kind of why are we kind of where we are now, do you think?
Thanks for the introduction, and let me get straight on to answering that question for you. I think where we are now is we have seen, each browser that's changing and taking a different privacy stance, they're products in their own right, and they're competing against each other. They're actively, they have good intentions. The aim is ultimately to protect their users. But there have been different ways in which they've looked at that. Apple with ITP came in very early and kind of took a very kind of hard and fast, we're making some big changes, you guys get on with it, and this is now our environment's changed. They've continued to iterate on that and sort of clamp down further and further. Very recently we've seen Chrome now take quite a different approach and say that We're gonna phase out third-party cookies entirely, but we want to find fallback solutions. We want to be able to think, if we're going to get rid of a technology, what do we replace it with? So we're seeing kind of very, very different ways of working, very different ways of dealing with the privacy issue. But I think ultimately it's different ways for these companies to pander to their users and to their customers, and to differentiate from each other. So I suppose that they can gain more market share, as ultimately that's what they're interested in.
Yeah. And I guess from our perspective, you've got these tech monolithic companies and all digital marketing is kind of caught in the crossfire, certainly all third-party companies, ad tech companies. It kind of feels like a bit of a pivotal period. We always talk about, breakthrough or pivotal times in the industry, but this really does feel like quite a big realignment of how we kind of track stuff online.
Yes, I think, starting from, I'm going to look back 2 years now to ITP, and that was when that was first coming about, it was kind of sending some shockwaves, and you know, that was that first feel of that kind of that seed of change. But now, as we've seen, so the other browsers jumping on board, you know, there's no going back, and this is only something that's continuing, and you know, everyone ultimately has to adapt to this. It's not going to go back to how it was. It's going to continue and continue to change. So yeah, we are very much at that pivotal moment.
And it sort of, I suppose, it runs parallel to the whole GDPR legislation, which is essentially requiring kind of privacy by design, mm-hmm. and kind of all of these things have to be baked into the kind of DNA of a company. And I suppose the primary thing we wanted to talk to you today was kind of a kernel of an idea that came out of that, which was sort of a realignment of how we track online, which obviously has been, I suppose, expedited because of the browser changes. So we launched last year Bouncers Tracking, which incidentally, we won't go into necessarily some of the real technical details of it, but if people are interested in finding out a little bit more about that, they can listen to our November edition of the podcast where you spoke to Craig in some detail about the specifics of it. But as kind of someone who is a bit of a self-confessed Luddite, if you've got an elevator pitch to sell Bouncers to me, kind of what would it be?
I will give it a go. So Bouncers Tracking, it's redefining how our tracking links work. It's vital that we can record when a user's clicked on a publisher site and gone to an advertiser and made that sale. What this is doing is, typically when that happens, we have an ad network that would sit in the middle of between the two clicks, and Bouncers Tracking is moving away from that and having direct links between advertiser and publisher and advertiser, removing the sorts of things that tracking prevention across the browsers are highlighting as potential issues, such as a redirect to an ad domain, the use of cookies in general. They're clamping down. So third parties, complete clamp down. First parties, they're clamping down on a lot more. So at Awin, we wanted to create a way of working in this new tracking environment that met the, I wouldn't sort of say the requirements, but met the trends that we were seeing and took us away from the risk areas, so that we would have slightly more future-proofed, longer tracking that can stay out of the marketplace longer and really be a foundation to build on. And from that, we're seeing increases in conversion rate. We're seeing sort of a myriad of other benefits that are built off changing our tracking to meet how the browsers are working.
So this is the thing I think that I find most interesting is that, you know, the technical side of it is one aspect, but actually some of the benefits, if we're kind of talking about it purely from a benefit-led perspective, some of the things that are kind of age-old problems. So, you know, for publishers, the load time of loading kind of a myriad of tags on their site slows down the page load. It slows down, you know, people's confidence in the content in the site. It becomes irritating and annoying for them. And I think that was one of the kind of things that I was most interested in as a result of Bouncers, the fact that that had been kind of massively addressed through this new tracking.
Yeah, so I can throw some stats and figures.
Please
at
do.
You. So,
love a stat.
We were taking out that network redirect in the middle, so we're making that journey shorter, so that makes for a quicker journey time. So figures wise if we were looking at mobile journeys on a, let's say, a good 3G connection, a poor 4G connection, so we're looking at about 1.6 megabits per second with 150 milliseconds of latency to define the connection that we're looking on, we're seeing an improvement of 1.1 seconds on average in the page load speed. Obviously if you have extremely fast 4G and that difference will come down to kind of milliseconds. But likewise, when you see even more challenging network conditions, then that speed has come up to 4.5 seconds with an increased page load time. And there's lots of research that's gone on to show that, you know, the quicker that a user can get to their required destination, that, you know, they have an increase in chance of converting. I think we've seen Google have produced similar evidence as Walmart did a study recently as well. So we're seeing a great speed increase, which is great for the user. On top of that, I mean, to addressing the core problem around ITP, you know, things that are interfering with legitimate tracking services. So why we built this product. So from an accuracy point of view, we're seeing about 4.16% increase across our test bed of publishers. So as we were creating this, as we were launching this, we had it running side by side with a group of publishers. So we could measure what happens with their traditional tracking, you know, what's happening. So last year's tracking before Bounceless was released, and we compare that with if Bounceless was working next to their account, what would the difference be in transactions that we're seeing and transactions that are no longer getting blocked? And from there, we saw a 4.16% increase kind of across that set. Likewise, I mean, it's not just about that actual performance. We're seeing the data that we get through it. So something that's happened is with refer URLs and the information, I suppose, where that user has come from, is being stripped out as a result of a lot of the tracking prevention. Using Bounceless tracking, that's always fulfilled, and it is always there. So when you look through the performance reports within the A1 interface, and you can see the publishers that have been using Bounceless tracking, then you're seeing the full referral information there, mm-hmm. which is great for campaign analysis as well as compliance as well. We package Bounceless within the tracking optimization plugin. So this is the service that delivers the right tracking method that you're going to use, Bounceless being the ideal method that we'd like people to have. But because it lives within a plugin, it's centrally managed and maintained by ourselves. So if we need to change how tracking works, if whatever, a new directive comes out, there are changes to privacy, we have to change best practice. We can very easily just push that out and roll it out through the master tag, through the plugin, and publishers become compliant with kind of an immediate effect.
And I think, again, this was a bit of a, certainly from my perspective, a kind of a bit of a mentality change, in that when we always previously talked about integrations and technical integrations, we talk about from an advertiser perspective, but this is very much across the board, across that user journey from publisher to advertiser.
Yeah, exactly. We have, you know, we have our tracking stuff, integration guidelines, the policies that advertisers must use when it comes to the tracking that they set up. But for publishers, it's been a case of, well, you know, you'll send some links and the advertiser has those tracking methods set up. So having this, putting that power with the publishers, you know, letting them take some control, you know, say, well, actually, if I want to have better quality links coming through, if I want to be more accurate, there are some steps I can take myself, and I'm not just relying on hoping that, you know, the advertiser is using our most up-to-date tracking methods and things like that. Yeah. So I think giving that power was really important for them as well. But when you combine it, actually, this is an update from, if you remember back to the November's episode, I spoke about how there was the conflict between ConvertiLink and tracking optimization. ConvertiLink being the tool that automatically creates a tracking link from a standard URL. Well, these two products now work together. So from a publisher's point of view, we've made it as simple as possible. If they want to just put in a link, it's just a standard non-track link. They can throw it in. They'll be using ConvertiLink. They'll be using our tracking optimization plugin. And that means that their links will automatically become tracked. They'll automatically choose that best tracking method, ideally Bounceless, so you can have a higher chance of that sale not being blocked by some sort of privacy or tracking prevention. And on top of that, when you use those two products combined, you're also getting an SEO advantage that previously, I suppose, was out of reach within the affiliate model because of the way that affiliate links work. Mm. And that was a really kind of a nice kind of a hidden surprise that, you know, it wasn't part of the plan, thinking about sort of how is this going to affect SEO, but it's kind of one of those sort of hidden end results was, you know, it's actually looking quite favorably on it. So that's really nice to see.
And, you know, I've mentioned how sort of privacy by design is kind of baked into the product and how we're kind of looking at the longer term view of these things. So, you know, you mentioned that if any changes do come about, then we have the sort of central capacity to be able to make sure that it's compliant, or we feel it's as compliant as it can be. How future-proofed would you say Bounceless is?
I mean, it's difficult to say how future-proofed it is. At the moment, I would consider Bounceless, you know, very well future-proofed, but as it relies on a technology that exists within in browsers, you know, who's to say how, you know, the browsers will change potentially that technology, how it's used, or anything like that. So when we look at the tracking optimization plugin, I'd say that is, you know, extremely future-proofed. Any changes that will come up within tracking can be fed through the tracking optimization plugin and then change, you know, how publishers therefore end up tracking. So we can control that, and that will should live, you know, for as long as Awin and adapt with how, you know, tracking has to be externally.
Right. Well, I mean, you can find out plenty of information about Bouncers on the website. Obviously, get in contact if you do currently work with us and you're interested in finding out more about it. Get in contact with whoever you speak to at Awin, and they'll be able to direct you in the right direction. So just before you go, though, Ed, while I've got you here, I just wanted to very briefly talk about another project that you've been involved with recently, which is the kind of the promotion of kind of increasing number of tech and third-party solutions that we're launching to support our clients' kind of wider marketing efforts. And one of those is Trackonomics. So again, you've got another elevator pitch to sell it to me.
So Trackonomics, they solve the problem of link rot on a publisher's site. So you think of link rot would be links that exist that are no longer generating you commission. Why is that? Maybe because it's going to a 404 page, an out-of-stock page. I mean, potentially that advertiser no longer exists. What sounds like a trivial problem is actually quite large. Granted, it's Trackonomics' own data, but they're estimating about £3.3 million a month. This is how much it's costing the affiliate industry. Awin did some of their own research, and we took samples of publishers. We found that between 13 and 38% of the deep links of the publishers that we sampled were going to 404 or out-of-stock pages. So
it's potentially huge.
Potentially huge. Now, you could argue maybe an out-of-stock has less impact than a 404, but still you're not putting that user where they went to go. They're putting them to a page where they can't make an action and, you know, fulfill that purchase. I think it might just make a little bit grumpy. What this solution does from Trackonomics is it makes sure that 404, so out of the box for free for all publishers, 404 pages will be automatically corrected and sent to the homepage. So although it's not, you know, the direct journey, it's not going to an error. It's going to the homepage so the user can still get some value from there. This isn't just working for Awin, though. Yeah, Awin are bringing the solution to the market through Trackonomics, but this will work for any affiliate network. And we realize that, you know, our publishers probably work with some of the other networks out there. And this will make sure that those links are also working, because ultimately, so we're increasing the quality across the whole of a publisher's website, which is only going to have, you know, positive effects for publishers and advertisers across the board.
And another incentive to integrate the publisher master tag. Presumably.
Exactly. Again, it's through on the publisher master tag, expecting it around the beginning of March, end of February.
Yeah, when hopefully information will be available on the website. But if not, you can check out Trackonomics. Well, we're out of time, so thanks very much, Ed. Look forward appearance number four whenever that may be.
Oh, I can't wait.
Thanks to Ed and Ricky for joining us for this month's episode, and next month we already have a raft of great guests lined up for you to hear from. Maya Knights, Head of Industry Insight at Eagle Eye Solutions, will hopefully be joining us to discuss her featured article in the new Awin report on the digital and physical worlds of retail converging and what that may mean for the performance channel. We'll also be speaking to Michelle O'Sullivan, Awin's Business Development Director, who has largely spearheaded the launch of Awin Access, our new streamlined affiliate marketing solution for startups, accelerators, and also entrepreneurs. And she'll be able to tell us a bit more about this offering and why it came about. And we'll also be hosting a guest spot from the affiliate and conversion rate optimization specialist SmarterClick to find out more about their offering and how they can support online brands make the most of their traffic. We'll also be looking to speak to our own legal counsel, Julia Bodner, on an upcoming episode of Awin Talks in the next couple of months. And one issue that we'll certainly have time to discuss with her is the increasing attention that regulators around the world are paying to the topic of advertising disclosure, which is something I think you and I, Kev, are seeing become a lot more pronounced and prominent within the industry.
Yeah, so only this week, what day are we? Kind of the middle of February, we saw some updated guidance from the Advertising Standards Authority in the UK. There wasn't anything kind of new or particularly revelatory out of it, but it was more a sort of a restatement, a refinement, more of an unequivocal statement about the need of publishers and influencers to provide disclosure when they are entering into commercial relationships. I think
for me, the really interesting thing that you see, certainly from an influencer perspective, is that industry is obviously quite new. And a lot of the companies that sort of have been commentating about and commenting on some of the changes seem to be sort of pushing back a bit and saying that they expect other people to regulate for them. And I think that's actually a really useful lesson for us, because it is something that I think in the affiliate industry we've been a lot better at kind of addressing and understanding different challenges and issues and tackling them head on to avoid kind of having regulation forced upon us. And so I think that this has got a lot more mileage in it. I think there's a lot more that we're going to see a lot more fallout in the UK, in the US. We're seeing it across continental Europe as well. So I think this is a topic that we really need to focus a lot more on. And hopefully we're going to be doing some work on it a little bit later in the year, which we can fill everybody in on.
Yeah, I think the affiliate industry obviously already has a set precedent around collaborative efforts in tackling issues like these that kind of often confront the industry, whether it's the affiliate industry specifically or something that's confronting the larger digital industry. And I think that probably holds us in, hopefully, good stead for tackling this disclosure issue that has become such a...
And regulators are more than happy to work with industries that want to do this. Mm. That's what they want. They want companies to come with sort of positive solutions to them to help them kind of address the challenges that they face.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly be covering that this year at some point in the podcast, in other forms of content as well. But that's all we've got time for in this month's episode, and we'll be back in a few weeks with another edition of Awin Talks. In the meantime, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Kev.
Bye.